the matters at hand, a logical place to start, I think, would be talking about the project in Russia and the beginnings of your collaboration and how we extend on to the project in Conical. Perhaps you could talk about the initial project.
So the meeting. I suppose,
4 years ago.
Deciding that we had things in common through teaching how to set up a work, showing me to, and helping work. And I think this moment was really interesting because in building things together, we realized how to build the work. And that was sort of the starting point to think about using the materials with the working on transforming and creating this culture. And then basically at the end of the show, the structure would be undone and we could do something else. Maybe this raw material would be contained in more and more art projects.
Great traceries.
Sorry?
They have a great sort of tracery.
So how do things unfold and change shape again and again. And so we had this idea of creating a sort of with a menorah that reconstructed and deconstructed something. And then this sort of growth to, through discussions and exchanges through internet, through Skype and being far away.
That wasn't the first time you've been to Australia, or was it?
That was my second time.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
But I met, Stephen.
For the first time you...
But that was not really... I suppose the real sort of beginning was when we set up this show. And then I invited you to be part of this show in the Agnes Concert. This work I presented in England was transformed to be part of...
I reused part of that work and used the material from that to create part of my work for the Allianz Concert Show. And that was really, I think, where I thought, oh, that's an interesting idea. And it sort of mutated and developed from that, as it still is. It's still mutating as well.
You've talked about this third entity in the collaboration. You almost leave your practices to create something other than your individual practices. Yet it seems to me that the two have come together primarily because of a sense of kinship and empathy between your two practices, as opposed to perhaps some collaborations which may come together over a particular idea. Concept, maybe you realise there's a one-off. I'm thinking primarily of the show prior to this one, where the two practices of, say, Stephen Rendell and Brian Spear are quite separate. They've come together over a specific project, over an idea, and then sort of worked out how to materialise or execute that idea. But I get a strong sense of Stephen's practice and your practice independently.
Oh, yeah. That's, I think it's important for us to... We are close in our practice. We have similar, the relationship to architecture, to the body, to things like that are really... we meet on this level. But at the same time, I think it's more about experimenting materials together and really sort of working beforehand. Way also that it's a bit of a space. It's very simple.
I suppose we keep on coming back to the point of why we collaborate, and that there's no point almost for us to do what we do in a collaboration unless it's outside or it differentiates itself from what we would normally So it's, and I don't think we're where we want to be with it yet, but I think our collaboration this time seemed a lot more clearer than certainly the one that I was showing. And maybe that's because we've already gone through a cycle of understanding our own working processes together, where this time we came into it, I suppose, more informed of how we work together. And I think each time within a collaboration that will grow and enhance or change or mutate, depending on where the collaboration leads, which we don't really know, I suppose, either.
No, but that's also the interesting point, is to be led by it as well.
Yeah.
And not really controlling everything as much as we do with our own.
Yeah.
Do you think the collaboration will continue? Is that what you're thinking?
We haven't sort of processed this, but it's that sense where we've already started talking about other developments out of this, which has nothing to do with either of our individual practices. It's actually about this, and that's an interesting aspect of it, that there's this completely other within our own practices, which is the collaboration.
Do you find, Rebecca, that the questioning why we collaborate permeates this exhibition?
It's interesting because the last time I was here, part of it was talking about collaboration as well, and I felt at that point that while collaboration is an interesting thing, it wasn't actually the most interesting thing, and in that sense, I felt that those two people had very clear, they were very concerned to retain and to talk about their own individual practices and create something very specific out of it that may happen just once, that may happen again, but felt like a particle. Whereas this feels like a conversation.
Yes.
And the thing about conversations is that they are open-ended. They can pause for a long time. They can come back to it and just do a little sort of something, and then you might decide to take it up or might not. And it's much more organic. I think that's the difference. This is organic, I feel. And you sort of look for aspects of each of you within it, but it's a very generous sort of thing. So while you say it's something that's taken on a life of its own, and I can see how it has and where it has, and that this itself as an entity might continue to develop sort of almost outside of both of you. I think it's a different thing. This is the feeling that I've got, and when my first impression of seeing the show was very much that there were individual elements that they came together, that they moved out, and as you were saying, that you actually need quite a bit of time to look at it.
So not forced to orchestrate.
Yeah, and it's not a complete work. Even in the space, you know, things move backwards and forwards, a bit like this idea of the conversation.
And so, yeah, this conversation, I think, works on sort of many levels, because we have this gold rush, and then we have this after that, .. And it's very interesting in terms of how you've used distance and anticipation and sort of consummation. You know, there's this other thing that's happened on the other side of the world which you provided some documentation, some evidence of. Yet we're left with something vastly different that's still talking about these spaces of unknowing gaps between. That to me sort of is part of that conversational, I guess, aspect, but we're not privy to all of it. It's little, you know, nuggets, if you excuse the term, little signifiers that have left some viewers wondering what else there may be.
But I suppose within that, that goes to the heart in one sense of the collaboration, where even within the process of making and forming, where we would have months of dialogue and lead up, say, into this show, after the show in France, and with email and Skype and sending images and drawings and everything back and forth, which essentially gets thrown out of the window when we come into the space, because then it becomes about the space, and it becomes about us working and being in the space. And
it's not really thrown out of the window.
No, but in the sense,
it's
like,
it's sort of like the foundation.
Yeah,
exactly.
So you don't
it's
see
but, it's but, invisible, yeah. But it's really building up.
Yeah, we're not beholden to it, though, in the sense.
Yeah.
Like it,
but that's that conversation thing again.
Yeah.
You know, in an interesting conversation, you're open enough to say, yeah, I've changed my mind. You know, actually, or that's just illuminated, or it's just pushed me in another direction, or I need to go away and think about that a bit more. So I think that...
Yeah, like, we don't... Like, we... In both of our shows we've done now, we haven't come in with a preconceived or prepared plan or work, or we have a myriad of ideas and images and sketches, and we work through them together. And there's many things even within this show that were sort of right at the front of what we were going to do, and as it evolved, they just went further and further away and disappeared. And because of the way the work progressed and the show progressed and the discussion progressed.
Certainly the experience, your experience of knowing when to stop is very sensitive. You know when to stop the part of the work. I see that through the elements of the work. From being in here for a day, you can see, okay, most works have been given a treatment of distortion. Now, in a kind of a preset tool sort of way, like, you have a mirror, the reverse, the point to point, the even the film with the rock, this like that, the stretch, you know?
Yeah.
And they've got this, and it's known, okay, if we keep wrapping this out, it'll be all look ridiculous. If you had that sensitivity to know it's not, that's where the collaboration is very sensitive, I think. And it's across different
media.
Which you don't see so much. You don't really see that so much. And that, for me, is the strongest part of the world, especially one of the delightful aspects of it. But I ask myself, what are these works like before they have been manipulated and distorted? What would they have looked like next to the distortion of the works? Even the ones that can literally do that. Even the contraption as well, the add-on to the contraption, which is an incredibly significant part of this gallery. That remark, another, I'll play with that too, a little distorted, just to hear. It's just perfectly timed, perfectly balanced.
I probably should add that David's talking about the, let's say, the architectural problem solving.
The wall.
The thing that you have come up with, being the wall across the
contraption.
And to me, that's really key in building up a sense of compression and anticipation. And, it becomes this sort of almost like entering the machinery. The way the nugget is placed and the way the title relates almost ironically to the specificity of something that we don't have. And then we come in after this compression and released into what is essentially floating, fragmented, and is much more about unmaking and revealing the spaces in between than it is about consummating that anticipation. Is that sort of how you were feeling about creating a very specific space in there? And I'm addressing that to you because you, when you first walked in, were very sort of passionate about changing that space in there.
I think we were both wondering
which were
this little
this wall we've built.
We were concerned with this partitions that were a bit like, I can't think about the proper word.
yes.
And it feels like it shouldn't be there.
Yes.
And we were a bit... we didn't know exactly how to deal with it. And...
Before we came into the space, we'd actually decided through our conversations to destroy this wall, petition wall.
To remove
it. to lightly remove it. And then...
Everything up.
But then when we came in, I sort of got down on my hands and knees and looked at how it was attached. And
like
things,
it's
and like, well, we just went, we can't afford to replace it, so we had to come up with a new problem.
It's funny for us because every wall's sort of been given to us by our artists and taken away by our artists, you know, over a period of time. So we've accumulated certainly that wall, this wall, and not, you know, got this wall, but that's turned up, you know.
So I suppose there was the idea of trying to create a continuous surface as well from this wall.
And it was also sort of not giving the space away as soon as you enter the corridor and sort of creating also a bit more sense of intimacy. Not really intimacy, but sort of more enclosed.
And also to differentiate, I suppose. That space out there is almost like, I suppose, the work from La Rochelle in one sense, or the articles that are in there from that, I suppose, they're a derivation of that, and then this one is, so as an antechamber, as a way of exercising, I think, some of those ideas.
It's a pity you can't see those on the way out, but not on the way in, I felt. They're beautiful works, but you want your viewing of them to be imbued with your knowledge of what you've seen in this space.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a constant problem with exhibition making, you know.
Absolutely.
But that is one that I constantly push for, but I found that really interesting because you read it very differently, having experienced these different media and elements, and the, as you were talking about, David, that point of stopping, you know, and then you go, and you look at them differently.
But I actually, part of me likes that, Rebecca, where the expectation of almost what you've just seen is altered or shifted from coming through there into this and then going back out. There's a different relationship
there
again. So it unfolds quite differently.
If you read something, every time you read it, you read it within a different context. So you see different things within it. So there's no doubt that it's working on that level.
Yeah. And the default sort of experience in this place is come to the back, come to that room. So, yes, I see that mask. I don't assume, I'm not just me saying that. I think a lot of the people who come here will come to experience books.
Yeah.
And then they come out with that. They can sort of bypass it, but then they can get it on the way out. They don't really see it first up.
Well, I'm not sure. And this goes back to my original point about after that. And for me, I didn't need the preface. I certainly didn't need the...
But they're such beautiful images.
But is that a reason to...
No, it's not. I agree with you, but I like
add them to the exhibition.
No, but I think... No, I can see your point.
But this is a larger point, too, about the notion of improvisation and specificity, you know, versus this continuity, you know, the conversation versus the moment of being here.
I'm going to be devil's advocate.
And there was a moment when you sat on the floor, the money had been spent on getting you here, there was nothing else, it was just you two. And it was a conjuring trick. And for me, there was a slightly jarring quality about the tagging it to the other show. So.
I just think that we can be very austere, and we can stick to our principles. I completely agree with you. But I think that you've got to have a degree of generosity and a degree of acknowledging for those people who haven't. This is a continuum, this is a conversation, this is an evolving thing. You've got to sort of show a little bit. You've got to give a bit of generosity. And I would normally not say that, but I think, you know, actually there's a...
It's also that, the festival and culture too.
Yeah, I think that for the situation and the, you know,
good. And there is a hybrid work, I think, that does that. And that is the work that's positioned against the back wall that we see on the way out through the door that we've created. And I say it's a hybrid work because it's very much of here. It's very much something you experience in an experiential way, I guess, as part of the exhibition. Yet, at the same time, it's a documentary image.
But people also read that work as part of this space because they think we did it in this room.
Of course, and it has an ambiguity which the other image doesn't.
No.
I guess, which is why I, for one, was keen to have it. The other image is a spoiler image, if you like, as opposed to really participating in the exhibition. Just to go back to Rebecca's point, that is the key work that people focus on is that lead. And you frame that. Quite definitely.
Mm. But that was also very intentional in terms of the positioning of that reflector.
I was talking to Adrian when I came and had a look at the show too, and I was a sort of what I would call an institutional memory. That I had a visual memory of a number of works being positioned near or around that sort of that often acts as a almost coalescing moment that you take away with you. And I think that sinks into the sort of acknowledgement of saying that then we're reinterpreting through the relationship to this going out the doorway, coming in and going out, which hasn't been there before.
Yeah, it's always, the editing process is always, I think, the most difficult. For me as an artist, in what I would keep and what I track out, sort of coming back to your earlier point as well, where even within this space when we were formulating these sort of works, it was almost like if I walked in as an artist, I would say, get rid of that, get rid of that, get rid of that, and reduce everything down to, because that's sort of how I work, but within the collaboration, it's, I think, because we see this as this unfolding event, it's like, I suppose, that snowball idea where then this will then carry into the next. So it's almost like we're just picking up the trace of the debris or the remnants within the next, and as somehow it's very kind of you to think of it as being a generous, I suppose, activity.
Yeah, and I think
but more so, I suppose, for us, it's a way of reminding us of the dialogue and the conversation. So they become trigger points in making here, that it's almost like they're totemic, that we need these babies around in order to remind ourselves what we're doing, in one sense. So it's not about us individually, but it's this other entity.
It's the body of the work. It's really about, I mean, this stack of wood could be seen as, you know,
yeah.
whatever, but it's kind of, it's not only reminiscence or sort of, really, the work.
I understand that it messes up the purity.
No. I don't want to get hung up on sort of a criticism of that. I guess I'm more interested in how that conversation extends beyond our immediate experience with this exhibition. And maybe what we should do is a better way of talking about it would be to talk about this neon work. I have told many people about the, well, let's call it a ritual, because it is the only carried over, you could say, conceit in a way from the first project, in that maybe you can talk us through the sort of methodology of that work, and then we can talk about it in relationship to this continuity, if you like.
Well, in terms of,
it's also a dialogue.
Yeah, it, it's It was the very first idea, I think.
It was
we had,
yeah, exactly.
Way back years ago.
Three, 4 years ago.
Yeah, where we were looking at the words that were the same as in French and English, spelled the same and the same thing. And it was funny because the words we were looking at were the words around the idea of,
space.
I suppose, space and landscape, and having, and so words like horizon and desert and invisible, echo, all those other words. Illusion.
Mirage.
Mirage.
And you said continent the other day.
Our original idea was to have it made in neon, and I can't remember why we wanted to make it in neon, but we thought that would be...
I think it was like the sense of something that is not really colourful, and it's sort of, you know, alive, or
yeah,
something
was,
which wouldn't be... I mean, of course, it's a material, but it's...
And unfolding that, like stretching that out and turning it, like the word horizon, and
but you render this word in a wire material.
Well, originally we wanted to actually render it in neon as the word, and then have him work with a glass blower to unstretch it, and everyone we talked to said, that's impossible. The glass will just shatter and break. So we came up with the idea of rendering it in wire, a stiff material that we can then make. So we script it out perfectly, and then unfold that and stretch it, and then have that reproduced in neon. I suppose part of the reason for the neon maybe was about almost the apparition, that sense of this other material that is intangible. Although it has a physical manifestation of glass, it certainly doesn't work when it's turned off.
but again, we have the anticipation of the sign.
Sign of reference. Absolutely,
and I think it's not exactly not so much in terms of specific works, but in terms of your the game is this tracery of memory that it sets up, and if you turned it off, you would still visualize the neon, and your eye would still see a reflection of color for a short period of time.
Yes.
So there's that aspect too.
Placement's great, and also size-olation being at the top. So that material is such an important aspect of that neon. I reckon that helps it. It stops it from getting lost.
Yeah.
It also helps it really stand out, get out further, and then, you know, talk to this piece.
And it's sort of placed in a non-space.
Yeah. Well, the placement was quite difficult. We looked at lots of different areas of placing around the space and the continuity of the space, and in the end that was probably the most logical.
And also because it's disrupting
the
problem. Well, suddenly it's sort of a thing.
Well, it's an arrow too. You just get into these other works and let these works come back over here. So it's a conduit, it travels over to these works, so that the scaffolding is a crack, you know, it's Mark is brought in to be able to get some pieces over here, and it just is, you know, it's just really great.
It goes back to the heart,
yeah,
I think.
It does all those things in a strong color.
And it goes back to the heart, conceptually, in terms for us, as I think the core of the collaboration, which is the discrepancy that arises between language, between our conversations and our trying to understand words and our dialogue, that this breakdown that often happens by reducing the text to rubber, essentially, it actually comes back to the most interesting aspect of our collaboration, which is this conversation, this and the gap that exists within the language. So I suppose the breakdown of that.
So it's again the sort of the construction. Organicism, which seems to be mirrored and reflected in each of the, in not only the working relationship, but each of the manifestations.
Mm.
you've used the term unmaking.
Unmaking.
Reconstruction, deconstruction. So in a way, we're left with the evidence of a tussle if we know that story. That's a grappling with the notion of collaboration as well as perhaps a skewed symmetry, this sort of tug, this stretch. And
was that, I'll come back to, was that generosity, the give and take, yep. rather than a tussle, which yep. means that someone has to be a victor?
Yes. Yep.
It's a different, I mean, I know we're playing with semantics and words here, but you know, it does give it a different skew, I think.
It's certainly interesting in relation to the symmetry that's being used in other words, because it's almost like another take on the idea of symmetry, what could be, but ends up being, as you say, organic as opposed to sort of binary.
Yeah, I suppose in terms of visually it's certainly organic or asymmetrical compared to, say, the mirroring work, but it starts actually as a very symmetrical piece in terms of when we lay out the text, we print out the font, we trace it, we make it as best we can in wire,
and
speed.
The movement.
And the movement is very, it's actually a mirror. Like we...
We filmed that as
we
well.
Filmed it.
We don't use that, but... Yeah.
But it's this, we start in the space and then it unfolds as this mirror act.
Oh, so it's not a written word.
Yeah, it is.
It's written, but in wire?
No, I know, but you say you trace out that, do you, when you're making the words in wire initially, do you try and make it like
a
printed font?
Yeah.
Yes, and that's different. I thought, I always imagined it as a sort of cursive.
It is cursive.
Yeah,
we do it in a single...
Like the manuscripts. But the thing is, we don't write the same way, and we had to find something.
This is not like we have issues over the letter
so
R.
R.
Okay. Well, we can't do that
the same way.
So you take your personality away in the creation.
Yeah, so that, well,
you can give that up.
We find an alternative. Z for R was a problem. The R is a problem. And so some letters were needed at
letter F.
So that's why we went to a font, a computer. And we actually constructed, and this word as well, we constructed using
different
forms that were cursive because they...
Getting more complicated.
Well, it's because of the R and the Z.
So when you said, I don't like your R.
No,
you said, like, actually, I never
liked it. She went, I can't read that, that's not an R. And I was like, so...
And then that would get to the truth,
isn't it? Yeah. And so, but it's also allowed us, because the practicalities of a piece of glass of 2.4, so the wire had to be measured. So there's a, I suppose, not a formula, but everything had to be measured out. So when we make the word, it's exactly written as 2.4 meters originally in the wire. And then we can pull it apart. So when it's on stretch,
you want a longer word, you just can't pull as much.
Well, no, it becomes a tighter word.
Yeah.
So
it's more push pull.
Yeah. So the longer the word, the more condensed
it
becomes, and actually, the more tighter those squiggles actually become as well.
Right.
So it's yeah. We can adjust by joining more neon, but it's more so a singular
gesture.
Yeah. And it's a very symmetrical activity.
It is that action of the mirror here.
Yeah.
I see that neon through this thing, you know, that decision to that's where the mirror is going to be, that's where it's going to be.
Do you know, when I first saw that, I wasn't remotely interested in any notion of mirror. I like the aspect of the continuousness of it. And I knew that it had to have been made in the mirror, but I didn't want to know about the mirror because I thought it disrupted the image.
It just brought up the title for me, so this really hideous contraption to enter and visit rock art.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's the hideous contraptions, the beautiful things.
Yeah.
we're causing so much problem.
Yeah, it is. But there's also a woman actually standing there, and you get this sort of woman looking at her own reflection as well. This sense of the almost like a doppelganger of these two. Because I always when I realised that, it was almost like, shouldn't she drop dead now or something, like when you see your when you see your doppelganger. But it comes back, it's a playful, I suppose, idea for me in terms of part of the collaboration.
I guess it was due to come up with that idea of reminding of, influences,
anxieties.
It comes up through the title and this mirror, bends back at you. Let's say bends back in a strange way.
But it's not fitting
and fitting.
Yeah.
It was always going to come into this work. The big post-colonial debate and those sorts of things are going to come up with this sort of structure. Just once again, knew when to stop. No beating over the head about this. Enough in the other works to stop that from happening. Composition is great for the show. This notion of there, it just brings those other things. These things defend some of those, ugly discussions from occurring. Up God Rush, it's Neil Young drum out. It's hard for me to, it's recur, it's supposed to be.
Okay,
unravel.
But when you think of the literalness of the Gold Rush, or after the Gold Rush, in terms of the fallout after those events, in terms of what occurred, but the intervention of those activities within the landscapers and the architectural structures of those, but the wealth that was generated or not generated, depending on whether you discovered or not.
Props of cultural mining.
Yeah, all of that. So this sort of plays back into that language in terms of what settlement does and doesn't do. Which is a very different tangent.
But this could, I think weaker artists would have, younger artists, less experienced artists, maybe this is a flat, perhaps a projected piece, you've got that lung skewer going on, I've got a corner and a corner just turned it, a difficult object to make given the difficulties of getting that work made here.
But I suppose it was interesting. Susan Jacobs made quite an interesting comment on it, which I hadn't thought about. Which she was more interested within the show, talking about force and the force within the work, and like the force of pulling apart or the force of dropping. And even she was saying this work has that sense of being forced, like within that wedge within the space. And I thought that was quite interesting.
There's a real lightness to the sort of architectural intervention of the show, in that particularly given the history of both of your practices independently, it was refreshing to see that this was created only really to set up a tension between sort of these autonomous objects and something that was perhaps more bound. When there's a real acceptance in places of the sort of limitations of a physical space. There's the way that this neon piece, just sort of rests, calculated but casual at the same time. The way that this work doesn't go all the way to the roof. It sort of has a sense of support. The way that this works in relationship to the wall is a sort of sculptural object that's also pictorial. All suggests this sort of wobble, this tension between introduced objects and a more sort of forceful architectural placement, if you like.
Sorry?
A more forceful sort of gesture that this wall is. Is that a way that you're moving? It's like a semi-autonomy, if you like. Everything can be sort of modularized, packed up, and reconfigured.
I think in terms of the collaboration, the elements of that came up in the show we did in France. And
medieval work was very much
Yeah, same as this one. It's
very light sort of way of being in the space and just grabbing a little thing about how these spaces also be
used.
We had this video camera that we set up on a little trolley, and we just rolled the camera all around the stage, and we had this horizon line basically all over the wall. But then there was some tape walls at some point that we could turn around to basically enter the dark space of the gallery, and it was interesting for us at the time because it was really related to the mind structure of the dance. There was the sound, there was the movement of entering the dark space and sense of being lost but recovering the light as well, and turning around as a loop and blah blah blah. I don't know why I was taking that.
And that sits adjacent to Caesar's comment in a way, because we're getting a representation of force, a pictorial representation, where this weight of prehistory and architectural quality.
We talked about this too when I came, the sort of monumentality, the potential monumentality of each element in different ways, and yet each is subverted, whether by making an object out of this massive image and then leaving it sort of seemingly, haphazardly against the whole, arbitrarily.
The low lights on the videos. Once again, as a competent practitioner, we go with that. Let's offset it. It's really offset, just even later. By the time of the day, it's just great. It's just failing with those real configurations that you get money from. They're as strong in my guess as any of them.
I think the video work is for me probably one of the most strongest aspects of the entire show. Which was surprising, but it was unexpected. It was one of those. It was almost an accident in our making. But in terms of the mirroring aspect of it, I think was when we were looking, when we'd done the work, the tests for it, and then we were looking at the treatment of it. And we sort of, when we first did the mirror, we were so shocked by the symmetry.
Yes.
Because when you see the original footage, it's just a mess. It's like I was laying up there, we dropped them down. It's a mess, but suddenly it became this very tidy, almost Asian images. I suppose there's that playful, I suppose, discovery that happens as well within the collaboration. And maybe in terms of our
those of them that they were made. They were not meant to be like this first. That's basically everywhere.
An accident or open to chance?
No, but yeah.
Well, yeah, it was chance, I suppose, when we were looking at the imagery we had and just looking at ways of dealing with it in terms of
the chaos of the image.
Yeah. But it was also the size of that wall that we were dealing with as well, and thinking how we're going to turn that image to that big and.
If you remember the images that I brought, that stereoscopy thing, and how the stereoscopy images, I found some images that were made to go on these machines to look at early century.
The tuba that you put on the little eyes.
There's a slight
to make 3D.
Change. And so I thought it was a great sort of place as a sort of slippage in how you look at something and this idea of perspective and depth and how this very simple device reminds me of this idea of you find you didn't use it.
Yeah.
That led to that.
Yeah, and the size of the wall. So there's an idea within the architecture or the intervention, which within our own practices is much more literal. But within this, I suppose it's implicit, where the size of the wall actually generated the size of that image. Or the modification is more slides. Or the video is only related to this in terms of the height and distance of the ceiling to the floor, which you can't read in the image, but it's implicit within its body. So it's maybe there's a little bit more trickery in the show than in one sense. It's not as obviously stated than in our own work, or even within the show in progress. It feels more nuanced in one sense.
I mean, the nature of the space brings things together. That large show, we had three rooms, and there was really a sense of room.
True, yeah.
It was very different. That, I mean, and so the words were telling different stories from one room to another, and how you would enter and go out, which is only the same
But it really determines something.
Oh, yeah.
It is the after doorway threshold, isn't it? And wherever it was placed, it was further up, this way, was always going to cause that sort of discrepancy between weak thing and the word.
But there are plenty of objects that you can put together in a space and not have the type of coherent, let's use that word, conversation that these works are having. Yeah, different mediums, you know, they've been produced through different actions, ideas, some specific, some elsewhere. Yet, there's a certain sense of linkage between them that is all the more powerful for us, not kicking the intimacy of your collaboration in our face. We're implicit in it. We're in it. You know, we're somehow asked to be part of the relationship between the works, but at the same time we're sort of pushed away. There's a space that's been stretched out. It's almost like a deflected space. You're sort of held back a bit. And it makes me think about, you know, the distance between France and, you know, the distance between perhaps ourselves and mythological almost imagery of Australia. It makes me think about your yearning too, perhaps, and maybe there's a yearning for imagery. Well, there's nothing particularly French about the show, I don't think.
What?
Whatever that might mean, I'm not sure. But
in a way, there's nothing particularly Australian about it either.
No, there's a certain intimacy and undercurrent, but you can't. It's sort of abstracted. No.
We probably, and this is something that's probably not written, if you don't have any information. We talk a lot about Australia. I'm very interested. Territory, history, development, people settling here. But I don't think we really have done anything that is, you know, pointing this out. We just talk about it, but we don't really. And this is an image that, you know, there's no. When I'm asked what it is from, I'm telling, okay, it's Flinders Range, but it's not. It could be anywhere. Really.
Yeah.
I don't think it's the point, but I think it's really interesting to know what it is, and I like very much the idea that there is something in the dark there that you go and look at, but it may not be, everybody would read it in a different way.
I thought it was a gold mine initially. I thought I was going to be down here, so I saw it instead of looking upwards, I'm going to see it as the gold mine in the system here.
Oh, right.
See where that would take. And that, because I was led by the title, because it's, you know, it's
direct. I'm interested in that idea of the title, you know, and the reference that you were just talking about the reference to gold mining history and history of a particular place and location. And I much more object or material specific than place and history, because when I look and in the show, I see no reference to Australia's colonial or post-colonial history in terms of the architecture, in terms of the intent, in terms of the work methodology, in terms of, and I was quite surprised when you talked about that, because it, to me it's about, if it is about anything, it's about a whole range of other things, apart, you know, and that, that would not be one of them. I think rather like the working methodology of the foundation that you bring to something that might not necessarily manifest themselves in the project. It may be part of the discussion that's underpinning it and the interest and so on, but in how you work with the space and how you make a show and how you make your way through this process, I don't think it's, it may be underpinning it, but it's not there.
And your choice of, you know, the grayness of the image, the black and white, the almost sort of, you know, sort of dragged, appropriated image from history.
And I just thought, you know, I was thinking, you know, sort of, it's got this monumentality and sort of the almost endeavour of, and the cyclical endeavour reminded me of sort of late 1960s, early 70s, and this sort of almost heroic aspect to it that you've then counterpointed or subverted through different other aspects. But, so I thought it sort of had a historicism that was more specific to us than to place.
And I suppose I don't necessarily locate the idea of, because we talk about this a lot in France as well, with the idea of gold rush. I have to say, like, the title for After the Gold Rush was really a practicality, because when we had to come up with the title for the show for Chronicle, it was literally, well, we've got Gold Rush, so why don't we just have After the Gold Rush? But in terms of, we talked a lot about the idea not so much of place with, say, Gold Rush or like, nothing so specific as a place, but more so as an effect. As I suppose events, which although Australian motion is French, it's not isolated to us either, in terms of Gold Rush or the history of that is a global sort of
thing. That was the one. The really big one that was the works number one we're talking about. And now that we've really looked at it, we've really looked at it in 100 years very intensely, so to say, what can we come up with? We managed to find ways to come up with some stuff using, you know, some of those great icons.
So it sort of plays into, I suppose, for us, not just that locative aspect of Gold Rush as a specific mining event, but the sense of whenever the flare goes out, in terms of like wherever the light fades after those big moments. And so it does relate in terms of, I suppose, art historical, and where we can pick at things of those as well, those histories, and play with those, and I suppose reinterpret it, which again I think is something neither of us really do so much within our individual practice, but as a collaborative thing, it's this other interests that we both have when we've taught, which I find fascinating. I find really fascinating.
That's just kind of a third person sort of vehicle, that collaborative comes in, once we talk about those objective elements of the things that you do.
We did try to come up with a name for ourselves as a third. New moniker as this third, a nom de plume artist, and
we
haven't been able to do it. Yeah, yeah.
Is it wood trap?
Well, it's different from the old body,
Here
it's like,
but it's interesting to say that, you know, I think of those Nolan pictures being taken to Paris and what an unmitigated failure it was. So for me, there is this, you can't do that without this huge history. The weight sort of subsumes and negates anything else that's happening. And I think that's really different for people living within a culture and having that sort of knowledge. And it's not necessarily a good thing.
But I suppose at this stage, it was something that if you could just look at it as anything, it would be cancer. No, but
I think
the idea that we.
I know what.
Would really.
Don't bring Clyde, please. Don't bring Clyde.
No, that's stupid. No, I hate Tower.
But it's sort of
but
the
you've
idea.
You've created a, something that is a universal language.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
is not specific to place or location.
You're talking about a vernacular, for example.
I am. Yeah. And then you go, so why do I need, I mean, the nice thing about being somewhere and being a nationality is slippages that occur. And being able to step outside and inside that. And knowledge it, but also slide between. And to place it so specifically in the context of a location or an identity, you go, well, that I know that you can say for the rest of the world they're not going to make those particular relations.
Yeah.
However, for a particular group of people at a particular moment in time, that is going to have specific readings.
A bad accent.
Yeah. And we've been through the whole post-colonial, you know, and that's not what the work, to me, my understanding, is necessarily about. So it places it within a whole discussion and argument that is historic.
It's
in
on
itself.
The other side of the wall, though.
Yeah.
It's really not
even here. But I suppose within that discussion, like that, and that
I think the discussion is valid, but I think that you've created, you've pushed that beyond. Mm. And so by having these pointers, sort of
dropped
back.
Yeah, yeah. It they've become almost like hiccups within that progression.
Or even a pause for break.
Yeah.
Not even.
Yeah. But I suppose within that there's a type of splintering that happens. That fracturing. And it's part of, I think, how we've been collaborating or how the collaboration is developing, where we have all these elements, like we're throwing back and forth at each other, that they actually become the hardest thing to manage, I think, in terms of what we want to make them work, is that editing and that condensation of the discussion and of the work, and of, I suppose, letting go of so many aspects of it. And that's, I think, something we're also learning within the collaboration is how that's being shaped and where the discussion actually is, how it's being treated.
This iconic thing could have gone pear-shaped. This means it could have gone pear-shaped by taking some of the categories. Maybe the focus on that structure is just let it get away from having that problem.
Well, but some people have been relating to this image very
well. I've had to field a lot of inquiries regarding
this. Yeah, but that's
image.
Interesting to me.
And
it's not something that's
usually in trying to
really,
yeah, it's usually in trying to respond to those inquiries, I direct them to this work as an indicator more of your intentions. That it's not about a specific legible sort of reading. More about the action, the tactility of what's a sculpture object fused with an image.
I
talked about the you know, the word being unmade, trying to steer something, particularly with the festival, you know, many people that perhaps haven't been here before and are versed in that, and the power of the image is always, and in your placement of it, is always a subtle thing. Else becomes like a sort of appendage to that.
I've sort of got that.
So, it's a question that's been asked many times.
Yeah, yeah.
But where is it? You know, what was the structure built for?
I suppose it's part of the problem, I suppose, of working with found images and things where there is a history. For not just the image, but in terms of the structure, and especially within Australian colonialism, the politic that is operating, that I suppose it's not the intent of the work, but it's unavoidable as well.
But in moving towards the abstraction that you've created in these other works, this sort of shimmy that you've got going between the literal representation. You, I think this work indicates the gap between them.
Yeah.
And it is, that has been the most common, I guess, space that some people have. Mm.
It is. Well, I suppose because we don't give anything up as well. There's no titles. It's just the title of the show. There's no nothing. I suppose people who come from an art background can use and read and engage. But I suppose the public coming in, especially festival goers who might not be necessarily okay with, I suppose, contemporary art discussions, this would be problematic. They can experience the work, which is great, but I suppose some of that decoding.
I don't know whether it's problematic.
It's one of those things I always grapple with as an artist, is how much do you,
give away?
Yes.
And how much, like, because once you start putting titles on things, it isolates it. People go for that rather than the work first in order to try and translate it. But it allows, I suppose, at the first encounter is the experience of the work, and that's what they've got.
Mm.
Regardless of whether what they get from it, it's they've got the experience. And for me, I think that's what I want. That's what I want when I go and look at art. I want that encounter. I want the experience before I know anything. I want that response and dialogue and fascination that happens when we look at art.
It wasn't, even for the, it's not as educated, but even for the people who visited who don't have that background, there's enough evidence in these other things to see.
In terms of the process and the making, those elements of risk that as an artist we take on or not, in terms of how far we push something or rein it in. But
there's a lot of play.
This was a really playful show for us. We had a lot of fun doing this. And
do you think that's because you're doing it with something else?
Yeah. Because there was almost a tit for tat, like a game that happens as part of the collaboration, the play. This was much more playful than the show we did in France, I think.
Yeah, I think we were much more stressed in France.
Yeah, this was more relaxed.
But, yeah, there was a lot of difference.
But the show in France was much bigger as well. I mean,
yeah,
it was three
it was bigger
spaces.
And we had bigger production and all that. I mean, there was
a surreal thing. But I think in terms of those formal elements, I suppose as we're discovering the collaboration as well, like this is still a discovery process for us.
Yeah, this is because we need to have a base as well.
Yeah.
I think I'm looking forward as well to see what we would do out of the remains of the wall, how it's going to sort of move to something else. And because we have only two shows together,
it's
not the longest running collaboration in the history. No. So, are there components of this show that there are not components? I mean, you've obviously got images, but are there components, physical components?
No, because they're all in France. Well, the show is still on as well.
Yeah, they're both operating.
We will have two storages.
Yeah, Marjan's got the storage and I've got this one.
Yeah. So
would you say that as an
Powerfully. I mean, it's not going to be like.
But it won't be. It won't be everything. Yeah. It will just be aspect.
Yeah.
What's needed, depending on what the next manifestation
that's
is.
That's what you put out is not what's needed. I think. That edge about risk and formality, I don't really worry about too much. With what you guys do.
No, I suppose, but that's.
You know, what's the risk and why we want to do it?
But that's my own, I suppose, in terms of as an artist. That's part of the things I'm interested in making as part of my process, in how things are pushed around or pulled back in the making. And I suppose because we both have this other person looking at us in when we're making, that sets up a
specific if you can
different
get that risk that you're talking about into this collaboration. Interesting to see what remains of the collaboration.
Yeah.
But I'm with you, David. I don't think that's an issue in a way because, you know, you say it's there's not a lot of risk, and I immediately think it's a comfortable show. Mm. And, you know, we've seen those shows that they're like a big, slightly overstuffed sofa. Mm. And
they're picking up their own elegance.
There's nothing about that here. Mm. So, in that respect, sense, when you say, I'm still going.
I think I mean it more so not in terms of the visuality of the show, but the process of making it.
But don't forget, you've also, you know, you say that you've had this discussion that it's been going on for a long time, that you send images to each other, that you use Skype, all the rest of it. You then also said that you come into the space, and even regardless of what you've worked out that you're going to do, you chuck it out the window. So I think that if it were comfortable,
it would
carry
on.
You know, I think that within what you've set up, there are you've enabled moments of not crisis, but potential.
They're subtle, but they're there.
Yeah, I know I've mentioned it once already, but that curve balance is up here, that tension that creates.
Because
I don't know, and that's what I wanted to ask. I mean, do you like? You know, he said, is that the weight of the work?
Like,
Is it the weight of the work and the necessary to pin it in, or is it, you know, that curve like I have the curve here? Is it an elegant curve, or is it a stressful curve caused by the weight of the structure?
I just wanted, sorry, because the risk, I went through and all that, but I found it funny that you say that, because we have to take risks because we have to trust each other.
And yeah, of course.
For me, this is the, I don't care about the risk or not the risk, actually, but it's really something for me that is about, we are going somewhere and we don't really know where we go. And that's stressful as well. I mean, it's not so easy. And
it could have been a disaster.
And I think,
but I think
we give a lot of things, and that's the risk, because we're willing to see what's going to happen, you know, and it's not like...
I mean, we came into this space with, what, just over a week to set up with absolutely nothing prepared for the show. And I mean, for some artists, they wouldn't be able to cope with that at all. Like, they would fall apart. Like, everything would have to be pre-made and brought in and done. But I suppose that's part of the confidence trip, I suppose, of the artist as well, or of us, that we actually do trust. I think Adrian was petting you a bit more than we were. Like, but I suppose
but you haven't concealed that. And formality can often conceal that in its engagement with itself, the object with itself.
Well, then I don't mean formal like that.
I know that. I know you don't mean that. But there's something. And I do go back to that word grapple that I initially used. I do find that there's a questioning of why you're here and where you're implicated in that question. I think that's why the elegant double sort of tip it over into a sort of self-satisfied sequence of words.
That's why I like those preset tools for distortion.
Yeah.
You know, you've gone mirror, but you haven't gone mirror twirl, you know? And that's what's good about those. That's that sensitivity to what those things do, you know, to manipulate.
Yes, you've avoided the complacency.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, I don't know, you know, like, I don't remember too many times where that's sort of done, just like that. I'm going to use the tools of the shop, they're going to be done this way, and they're going to just
convey
meaning and purpose, and not just look like the tools that manipulate and distort them. But you can still see the origins of what you've distorted from.
I've noticed no one's mentioned the gold nuggets.
Sorry?
No one's mentioned the gold nuggets.
It's a film. It's a colour film.
The what? Ah, yeah.
It was an interesting last minute.
It was made last minute, but it was something we knew we were doing. Because we left La Rochelle doing with this gold nugget, this limestone rock, which was in the garden of gallery, and we did it also last minute. I mean, it's just this idea that we wanted to do it,
we had to get permissions as well to do that.
Oh, yeah, it's true. Story. Yeah, because it was location. But here I thought it was interesting to find a local stone as well and to just do the same. I don't know, for me, maybe a bit of time for me, but I really like this action we can have
on
the material.
It's so really angsty, I think, you know, it's like...
A what?
Angsty. It's leaving guns at the door, you know, it's that kind of an object. It seems to be placed like that. It's doing those things, it's doing stuff in Taiwan, and I like that for the show,
you know? It
matches the clouds, you know.
It's got a Baroque quality to it.
Yeah.
Would that be Baroque?
It would be Baroque. I mean, it's really,
it's a big gold rock.
But it's one of those things, like, in terms of the logic of it, in La Rochelle, we were in this very Baroque space, which once would have been covered in gold, all those decorative elements around the space. And now it's the colour of blue tack. It was amazing. Grey colour that came to the door. And so the gold application within that space was really pertinent to its history as well. And I suppose here, although it was, and it was very specific, we're here. It's, I find that the gold nugget team far more playful. They're almost comical.
We've got a lot of rock art going on in Melbourne over the last few years. A lot of sharks.
Yeah.
It's good to see them back.
But I should pass on that the inclusion of those rocks has been a little controversial, particularly for artists.
Yeah.
They didn't need that level of sort of
burlesque. Yeah.
It sort of tipped it a little bit too far in a certain direction for them. When I say them, I'm probably talking about a conversation of like 6 to 8 particular artists. I just should convey that.
No, it's one of those
things. Particularly in relation to what we're talking about with the image.
It is one of those things where it's. They don't add anything, nor do they take away, in one sense, I think. They're almost a neutral object for us.
Yeah.
But I think for other people coming outside of our conversation, they are this strange manifestation. They are.
You will pass the text wall.
I do.
Well, that's it, because you mean what?
Yeah, I know.
But
that's, I suppose, part of the playful nature of what we do as artists, where you combine these elements, or you throw these things together, and you can be very wry in how you do that, or very, I suppose, jokey or serious, but it just provides, I suppose,
is that where the collaboration's got a mind of its own?
I don't know.
I suppose it's... Yeah.
And you wouldn't.
No,
not at all.
In collaboration.
But that's why we have fun with it, because we just think, well, like, I'd never do neon in my own practice at all, but it's just a thing, here's an opportunity where we would throw, it's almost, maybe, but,
so you wouldn't show the neon, you just have the light.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, use the
yeah.
But,
I mean, you just have the emanation.
Yes.
So, the collaboration allows us to play outside of our own.
Which is what I really like about it.
It provides a completely other way of working.
Do you think getting back to one of the questions that we asked at the very beginning, do you think that there is any aspect of this collaboration that then informs your own practice?
I think so. I don't know yet, but there's certainly ideas I've thought of after, say, this show, where I think that would be really interesting to do. But again, I wouldn't know. Like, that would be something I would re-put to Marie-Jean as part of the collaboration, and then either out of that we would either decide whether it's part of it or not, or whether that's just me pushing my own work. But it certainly does feed back into my thinking.
I was going to say, even in terms of a thought process, I mean, one of the things that I enjoy about collaboration is this verbal push and pull, the discussion, the sort of challenging your perceptions. And that, you know, that's one of the really good things about collaboration. And the fact that it makes you often feel very uncomfortable.
And I think that's
it's a strength, and it often doesn't always happen, but, you know, it's good. And so, how do you then take those elements back into your own process and your own work? And this is something that I thought about a lot. Can you set up some sort of internal dialogue in your mind that sets up a parameter and then challenges the parameter? I mean, this is not, you know, this has been going on forever, you know, the French and absolute experts at it. But it is something that's quite interesting because we're using a different language. Our context is different. Our experiences will be different. So therefore, how we mediate this knowledge will be different.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that's quite interesting, whether on a subconscious level this conversation impacts
how you perceive
it. see.
I think it would have to. It's a type of thing where you can't be dichotomous about it. I think it seeps and it feeds into. Because it comes out of that as well. I find collaboration inherently difficult in many respects. And
you have to put the ego away.
But yeah, it is. You have to really surrender to this other activity, and it's such a different head process and headspace of working, and it's always challenging. But I think it's inherently rewarding. But because this is our second, and we've done them very close together, I suppose, in one sense, like June to, I mean, I've had a show in between, but that was, I suppose, pre-planned in one sense. So I don't know how it's going to impact in terms of my proposal when I get back in the studio. But I'm sure ideas will come, but that's where it just becomes, let's say, sort of, well, maybe that I should put out
there
a collaboration.
That's what I was thinking. Like, you're sort of defined naturally.
Yeah.
Buckets of things.
Yeah, yeah.
But of course, things are also interconnected in different ways because we can't forget what we're doing.
Yeah, well, that's
true. I mean, how we proceed using a certain type of material onward. That's why I felt it was good also to go somewhere we don't necessarily use. I don't use so much video sometimes, a little, but not really. And,
I never use balsa.
But not,
I would never make a work out of the world. Maybe I would.
And that would be complicated if we really use the stuff we like to use. But I think that maybe.
But also the working more
longer period of time. Digest more and being able to.
It's like the solo
be okay with that.
The band.
The band, oh yeah.
Solo. This band.
But see, we have to, as a curator, we have to do it all the time.
Yeah.
And then, you know, what happens if you get a number of curators working together to put on a show? It's an interesting process. And it shouldn't be one that, it should be one that happens.
Or it's the same, a theme show, a single media, the actual show, the videography. Stand at one curtain, you've got the conversation with one worker going into this work, and then thankfully the artist has to send out that one. But that must be a whole different battle. You know, that must be something to work out. Not just the selection of works, but what's on, what's you know, what size.
How does it
read?
How does it
read? We even have that here now where when the enclosures, when it's closed here, the legs can be up into this space, into that space, and you take what you. This one into there and vice versa. We never used to have that since now that we have the space change. We do, and you know, what you've done here is actually stop that from happening again.
You have a
person.
Well, we should probably wrap it up, but congratulations. I mean, it's such a meaningful collaboration. I mean, that in the terms of so many young artists dealing with collaborative projects, it's going to be a sort of a fashionable vehicle makes it something that's more than the sum of its parts.
Thanks for calling it Shell.
Yeah, I was wondering where it's going.
Thanks for going. What? Say it again.